8:21. I now have assembled the complete Gnostic system with its two realms, only one of which, the upper, is real. Form one of Parmenides, as stated in Valis. It all stems from the insight that our world is not real. Then we ask, not real in relation to what? Something must be real, or else the concept irreal means nothing. Then we ask, what is the real like? And how do we find it? And we ask, how did this irreal world come into being? And how did we get imprisoned here? And then we ask, what is our real nature? If reality, rationality, and goodness are not here, where are they? And how do we get from here to there? If this is a prison, how do we escape? We learn of a mysterious savior who camouflages himself to outwit our jailers and makes himself and his saving gnosis known to us. He is our friend, and he opposes this world and its powers on our behalf as our champion, and, one by one, he takes us out of this world. Folder 6, Early 1979. 6-7. Everything I know is a triumph over amnesia. All my gnosis, books and exegesis, derives from memory. There is no amnesia compulsion. It's not a plot or a virus, etc., just a failure to create memory holograms as fast as reality permutates. I'm laying down fast holos. I figured out the reality situation well enough to generate a future reality, which will please me, not be painful. I beat karma, and in 374 took control. 6-8. The waveries, living info, which dialectic permutates, as in the Le Guin book. Our dreaming makes it so. Note. The Waveries is an amusing apocalyptic tale of an electromagnetic alien invasion written by Frederick Brown and appearing in Astounding Science Fiction in 1945. Dick loved the story. End note. 374. Simply, you ordinarily, 99.99% of the time, simply lack the memory capability to remember things were just now different because each difference lasts only the nanosecond of the dialectic of each form axis, i.e., bit of information, of which our world at each nanosecond is the composite total. It's as if 374s occur all the time. We generate them. But we never remember. 374 was anamnesis. All we remember is sustains. But right now, the sustain of rationality is interrupted by irrationality, and I've remembered well enough to spot it and take advantage of it. 274. Memory of previous frame. We don't remember well enough due to physical limitations, and this puzzles us. We know something's wrong, and we try to come up with theories. These theories, being false, are the impairment I saw, the fucked-upness of the theories. Simply, we lay down memories of only a fraction of the past. 6:23. I provoked a palpable contradiction in reality. It betrayed its self-canceling nature, so no rational analysis is correct. It must pulsate in self-canceling oscillations so rapidly that we don't realize it. So what is true at one nanosecond is not true at the next. The reality which exists now cannot be the reality which existed a nanosecond ago, despite our memories. I just remembered my first realization when I was loaded last night. Everything is backward. We must reverse all information. 6:24. I sense zebra smiling. Games, fun, riddles. Since truth changes, there is no answer. Process is everything. What was true 10 seconds ago is not true now. The dialectic flip-flops which generate their negations instantly. Self-canceling, if I say zebra is a person, The truth of this instantly generates its opposite. Zebra is not a person. And that becomes true. Whereupon another opposite is generated. Is zebra a sustain or a subcarrier? Or one flip-flop, one out of infinity minus one? Yes, the last. One out of infinity minus one. Zebra is eternal for one nanosecond. But during that nanosecond, he was everywhere in all the flip-flops by definition. If he was in all the flip-flops, he is ephemerally eternal in the sense of reconstituted ex nihilo in every flip-flop, a constant, but he must come into existence each time. That is, he dies and is reborn each nanosecond, so we find him in any given nanosecond, in what actually is an ultra-ephemeral morphos, comes into being and passes away, comes into being and passes away again elsewhere, like a fruit fly, the way circles are spontaneously recreated. The Fibonacci ratio, 1 to 618034, comes and goes. So it is ephemeral and yet eternal. Thus the blood, the plasmate, reconstitutes itself ex nihilo, everywhere and at all times. 625. We constantly unconsciously modulate future events, but don't know it because, one, we do it unconsciously by our impersonal will. Note. Despite what we are repeatedly told by the dogmatic debunkers, there is a rich and impressive scientific literature on precognition. Dean Radin, of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, has been one of the real pioneers here, particularly around what he calls presentiment, a kind of spidey sense that many people appear to possess that allows them to sense dangers or desires a few seconds into the future. In short, a humble form of Dick's future modulation. What is perhaps most significant here, and not always recognized, is that the parapsychological literature strongly suggests that most psychical functioning takes place unconsciously or in dreams, that is, below the radar and range of our conscious selves or functioning egos. We are two, and our second self is a super-self. JJK. End note. And two, what we call memory is not memory at all, but a product of each current nanosecond flip-flop frame. We don't remember the past being different just now, a split second ago, and so we see no pattern in how each of us determines his future reality. Everything hinges on anamnesis, which isn't just improved memory, but actual memory of the previous frame. Without anamnesis, there is no identity continuity from flip-flop frame to frame. But karma, which we make influencing what will later happen to us, follows us inexorably. Viewed pragmatically, Christ offers us more than scarce can be conceived. But it would seem that there are no Christians except the original ones, which conforms to Luke's secrecy theme. Everyone else is suffering from a relative occlusion, primarily of memory. They are driven helplessly down their compound form axis, victims of karma generated by their previous thoughts. Thoughts, not actions, as Jesus alluded to. Thus, Valis is here and rational. But they are caught in an irrational, irreal maze and hurled helplessly through it, afflicted by projections of their own thoughts, as in the Bardo Toldo. In fact, they are in the Bardo Toldo state, half dead, as in Ubik. 641. Therefore, I maintain that whatever the intent of the authors of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, they are in fact describing our world and state. Note, when W. Y. Evans Wentz first prepared the Bardo Total for its English edition in 1927, he called it the Tibetan Book of the Dead in order, one suspects, to link it to the popular Egyptian Book of the Dead. Dick owned the 1960 edition of the text, which had been reissued with a new introduction by Carl Jung. A funerary text designed to be read at the bedside of the dead, the Bardo Todol, is more accurately called liberation through hearing during the intermediate state. The intermediate state in question is the Bardo, the spectral halls of transformation that lie between the death of the body and the almost inevitable rebirth of one's own mind stream. Most souls are made so variously terrified and lustful by the apparitions that they are inevitably sucked back for another round. For the Buddhist practitioner, release lies in recognizing the emptiness of these projections, which are nothing other than one's own mind. Dick's insight here, that the Bardo is actually our world, is perfectly in sync with traditional teachings, as the intermediate state refers not only to the afterlife, but also to sleeping, dreaming, sneezing, and life itself. We are always in a liminal zone. For the Tibetans, an escape of sorts lies in the clear light of non-conceptual mind. Dick's more wayward light is pink, which is also, in Tibetan iconography, the color of the supreme lotus of the Buddha. E.D. End note. We are in a decomposing, degenerating process, and will continue so unless enlightened by Vallas, who introduces negentropy. Determinism and entropy are considered here as identical. Succumbing to what is really a self-generated fate is identified with death and disorder. Upon the lethal triumph of this decomposing process, nothing new comes into the individual or macro mind. This is tantamount to psychosis or ultimate brain dysfunction, schizophrenia. I maintain that, regarded as a totality, the cosmos, including Vallas, is partially in this state. A measure of anime or irrationality pervades us and pervades Vallas. Technically, the dialectic loses its generative power, or potentially could lose its generative power. This is the abysmal evil to be fought at all costs, inasmuch as its victory would snuff out the cosmos. This is being versus non-being. In my opinion, human beings freeze or die or partially die vis-a-vis this dialectic. Its progression in us, as us, is not automatic. Each of us is a microform of it, and to the extent that we succumb to fate or astral determinism, we succumb to death and madness, to congealing. In conclusion, I conceive of our situation as one of entropy, or decomposition, a succumbing to determinism, which is to say, the products of our own former thought formations. Therefore, for us, the past determines the future. Into this dying system, Vallas breaks, bringing new life and energy and freedom and knowledge. He impinges one way and from outside, as if invading our world, which is not a real world. To encounter him is to encounter the uncanny, the inexplicable, the destroyer, rather than sustainer, of what we misconstrue to be world. It is his macro mind shattering the brittle and congealed husk of our own objectified prior thoughts which imprison and devitalize us, the past devouring the future, whereas Vallas, as the future, turns around and devours the past, negentropy attacking entropy, form affecting non-form. Note. Here Dick suggests the radically liberatory possibility that reality, the Tao, the palm tree garden, can break through the present if you will destroy prior thought formations, including those that separate you from the One. Here Dick resonates with Joyce's Stephen Dedalus, who wished only to awaken from the nightmare of history, an awakening later perhaps achieved by Joyce in Finnegan's Wake. Readers familiar with Zen or Korzybski's notion that the map is not the territory or the stillness in which the divine can manifest in Quaker or Vedic traditions will recognize some of the practices appropriate for a world mediated and constituted by the multiple objectified mistakes of language and other previous thought formations. In this sense, Vallas comes not to destroy, but to fulfill the law. Matthew 5:17. By overturning prior concepts like so many tables in the temple. For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5:20. Righteousness here is anything but self-righteousness. It is instead the humility and practice necessary to silence the mind in order to perceive reality, a causal field unmistakably affected by the language by which we model it. R.D. End note. I conclude that we are dying in a mental sense, but are virtually without insight into the fact that what befalls us is a projection or thought form of death per se, to the extent that things happen to us rather than occurring as a result of our volition. We are destroying ourselves, which may account for legends of the primordial fall. Thus, our process mind becoming congealed is experienced objectively and externally as a closing in of the necessary, the inevitable over which we have no power. We succumb to our own dead mind, but mistakenly experience it as a victory by the external world. 644. Regard this as a scientific hypothesis. What we call reality is in fact an objectification of our prior thought formations, since in fact we are dead and dreaming in a state of psychic decomposition, as depicted in Ubik. And under such conditions, we have no world but that of our former thought formations returning to afflict or delight us, as depicted in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is where I got the idea for Ubik. In other words, I read the Tibetan Book of the Dead in the late 50s or early 60s, and realized that our world and condition was in fact depicted and not, as is said, a world and condition which follows our life. From internal evidence in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, I discerned that those in the Bardo Todol state do not know they are in that state, but imagine they are still alive. They do not know that the evil and good spirits, events, people, things, which they encounter are their own former thought formations projected onto a pseudo-world, and that contrary to what appears to be the case, they can create, change, and abolish future reality, not present reality since there is a lag. In Ubik, my characters die and enter this state but don't know it. I then departed from the description of the Bardo Todol existence in the Tibetan Book of the Dead and added Ubik, a vast logos-like mind who invades their decaying world and rescues them. Now, if I was right that secretly the Tibetan Book of the Dead depicts and probably knowingly depicts our present life, world, and condition, I could anticipate that after a suitable time lag, and especially if I was dying, like Joe Chip on the stairs, I could expect intervention by my thought formation, Ubik. In 374, due to overpowering dread and enervation, I began to literally experience the colored lights described in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and knew myself to be in the Bardo Todol state. Yet it was this side of the grave. I have not died, ergo, the Tibetan Book of the Dead does depict, secretly, our present condition. And then, sure enough, exactly as I described in Ubik, written information appeared to me, and presently, Ubik itself, down to specific details. Valis, i.e. Ubik, then, is a projection of my own mind, and not real, but, as the Tibetan Book of the Dead says, nothing we experience is anything other than objectification of our own prior thought formations, and enlightenment consists in knowing this and so controlling them. Only if you, 1, read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and 2, realized it secretly applied to this life, could you accomplish what I did in creating Valis. Truth is totally plastic and represents a complex mingling of our former fears, beliefs, and desires, mostly unconscious in us. The mind has the power to change its environment. We do so constantly, etc. I have choice in the matter, so I ask not what is true, but what modulations shall I imprint on the stuff around me? Before reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead, I was tending toward a radical Gnostic acosmism. Hence, I, unconsciously, i.e., my will, correctly deconstructed the Tibetan Book of the Dead, as few others have. In Ubik, I applied it to us, deliberately. Soon, impossible things began to happen. I found myself in the silly putty metastasizing kind of universe I write about. And in 374, Ubik rescued me in a form ultra-syntonic to me, which I have frequently realized but didn't fathom until last Friday. 649. This is esoteric gnosis of the highest order. We are not living, if we are living at all, in a real universe. It is a dream. But it does not respond overtly to our beliefs, i.e., fears and wishes, or worldview ideology. Its response is 1. Delayed, 2. Randomized, 3. Concealed adroitly. After all, it is sentient, playful, and alive, because we are. You must have the key premises, wisdom, pragmatic ideology, etc., at your disposal to gain control over it. That is, you must guess right, assess it correctly. It's a game, a puzzle. The reward for guessing right is joy and power. For guessing wrong, a bitter, disappointing, frustrating, defeated life or death. The Tibetan Book of the Dead tells the truth, and yet we misread it because it says, "These are instructions to the dead." I tested the instructions out when I wrote Ubik, adding to the Bardo Total Journey what I desired to find there. Ubik modeled on the Logos. So from 274 on, when I remembered I am actually one of Christ's 12 disciples, I have lived with the Logos beside me. Yes, in 374 the radio kept saying, "Bright white light, shining in the night to guide your way." Note: Bright White, a pop folk rock hit by Sean Phillips from the 1973 album of the same name. End note. And at the time I understood, I steered toward it and found it and was reborn healed. 657. It's interesting to read back to pages 21 and 7 and see how on page 7, when I was totally loaded, I had the ex nihilo satori, that I figured out the reality situation well enough to generate a future reality which will please me, not be painful. I beat karma and, in 374, took control. Thus, in the following pages, I came to recognize Valis Zebra as my conscious, liberating thought formation of Ubik a decade before. And finally, I found my way to the views of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, as to the nature of reality as karma, or our own prior thought formations, which we must learn to control. This insight was a glorious quantum leap up, that a decade before 374, I myself consciously generated Ubik, which then in 374 intervened and invaded and liberated me exactly as it does in the novel. Thus was explained why when I encountered Zebra Valis, I had the uncanny feeling that I was encountering my own thoughts, coming back from a trip around the whole universe, like the Waveries.